This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is BFM 89.9. I'm Chuang and I'm joined by Wong Xiaoning on this lovely November morning, 9th of November 2020. Now, lots to talk about this week. We've got the budgets and all that narrative around it. We've also got the outcome of the US elections. But, you know, a year ago, roughly give or take about this time last year, that was apparently when the first case of the Wuhan virus was found. A lot of people don't realize this, right? But we are a year into this this pandemic.
Yeah, and well, there's a little glimmer of hope because I think AstraZeneca and their results came out to say that they should expect a vaccine by year end. Of course, whether all of us get it, when we will get it, is the big question mark. And, you know, whether Malaysia, where do we rank in this search for the vaccine? We have participated in COVAX. I think in the budget, there's been talk about it, setting aside $3 billion for it. But like you say, it's a super packed show today. Budget 2021, very important. The largest ever expansionary budget in Malaysia's history. We'll go through many aspects of that throughout the day. And then, of course, the president, the new Chang president of the United States.
I want to say Sleepy Joe. Did I just say Sleepy Joe?
Don't say that, Chuang. He's the leader of the free world.
He is indeed, isn't he? Yeah, we've got all that, right?
And
what it means for the rest of the world. But I guess in the meantime, we're going to talk about all our other 6 to 7 a.m. stuff, which basically is us trying to sound intellectual about inane things in general.
They're not inane things. Because one of the things I'll be talking about is the fact that schools will be closed until January next year.
Which affects me directly.
Yes, and, I think you're not only you, my dear. The world doesn't revolve around you, but a lot of Malaysians will be very impacted.
Yes, yes.
And the announcement came quite suddenly. So whether whether parents are ready, whether children are ready, what will the impact be on the kids actually?
Well, so the fact that very few of the kids have gone to real class for a significant period throughout this year. So how do you transition to the next year if you haven't learnt anything this year?
And what about all those kids who are due for exams? Does their life just kind of stop? Is it paralysis for the moment? What happens to them?
Okay, so you talk about schools, I will talk about side hustles. All that and more, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was a bit of 70s glam rock by Thin Lizzy with Wild One. I think that describes you and me. Not really. Do we want to be Wild Ones?
No, I'm definitely not the Thin, so maybe the Wild.
I'm just Lizzy. Call me Lizard for short. Okay, so here we are. 7 minutes past six. We're going to take a story from Forbes.com about how side hustles are an interesting proposition for people who have been otherwise, I guess, compromised by the pandemic. And I would actually venture to say that pandemic or no pandemic, good times or bad, side hustles are a good thing because they give you extra income, they give you a bit of a distraction from the norm, and you can choose to be a creative side hustle. It doesn't have to be a dry, cardboard-chewing side hustle.
Yeah, and the other, I think, perk I see from side hustles is that they don't always just become the side hustle. Maybe eventually becomes so good, or the income is so good, you've built such a great name around it, that the side hustle becomes your main hustle.
No, you're right. Actually, my sister's husband, in Australia, right? Her mother-in-law used to, as a side hustle, sell like little leather goods. And the husband was doing quite well in those days. In fact, he was doing so well, but then he lost all his money. The wife's side hustle became the family's main business. And now they've got like 15 leather stores all over Australia. Mm. And they're like official merchandise for like Tumi and Prada and all these other brands, you know. So, and a lot of esoteric Italian ones as well.
So that's the point, right? How do you decide what is the side hustle you should kind of go and practice or like kind of encourage yourself to develop? Because we all start these things somewhat as a hobby. But what can you really monetize at the end of the day, right? Or should you actually even think about that? Should it just be something you develop because your interests are there and then as you go along, you think, this is the potential?
Well, there's two avenues, right? One is that if it gives you a creative outlet, then you should, for example, if it's writing or art, for example, or design, right? The other thing is that if you're already good at something and you're not doing that in your job necessarily, for example, whatever, it could be nursing, it could be dog walking, for example, right? You can do that as well.
Oh, just the things that spark joy in your life.
Oh, quite Kondo-esque in that respect.
Yes.
And if they do both, if they're creative and you're already quite good at it, well, then Bob's your uncle.
Yeah, but I wonder whether, you know, how much money can you really make and what kind of plan should you have? And how serious should you be about it? Or because of this COVID-19 era, that really brings to fore this question, right? If you want to make it a side hustle, I think you can't just, like, it can't be random. You have to have a kind of a clever marketing because you got to let people know that you're doing this gig, isn't it? Otherwise, how would anybody know?
Well, some side hustles are unilateral in manner, right? For example, if you're an accountant, for example, just say you're an accountant, right? And you're good with counting and you're good with analyzing.
Oh, what a mystery.
Right? you know about ones and zeros, right? And then you look at stocks and then you know what to look for in investing and then you're a good value investor, you're a good stock picker. And then investing becomes your side hustle. And then this is a unilateral activity. You don't need whatever, right? And then, you know, but bam, right? Suddenly you're making more money from picking stocks than you are from accounting.
Which was the case recently when retail trades were an all-time high.
Well,
and then
exactly.
We suddenly had a lot of people just spending all their time day trading, especially some people who were stuck at home during the early phases of the MCO.
Yeah, and a lot of people were quite amused to find out that the retail day investors on Robinhood were making more money than the fund managers who were being paid $1-2 million a year. Remember that, right?
Yeah, sadly, I do remember that.
I remember some fund managers.
Ex-fund managers. Yeah. But, you know, I don't know whether that's going to be like a long-term side hustle. But the point is, like, let's say for the ordinary Joe, what should I do? What can we do? Because let's face it, if you're facing tough times and you've had a pay deferment or a pay cut, if you lost your job, then really it's time to kind of concentrate and look hard at your certain skill sets that you have and develop that to always have that extra income or the ability to make that extra income. That's what it's all about, right? It's a form of financial planning.
Correct. And you've got no choice because this also dovetails with employers. Employers, unless you're glove manufacturing, right, you're going to be under quite distressed times. A lot of employers will want their staff maybe to cut down on the number of hours and to, you know, basically to come in less. So from, say, working 8 hours a day, you now have to work only 4 hours a day. You've got 4 hours spare, right?
Mm.
You can think about a lot of things to do. And 4 hours is a long time. And 4 hours means that basically you've got another 16 more hours during the day when you can maybe sleep less or, you know, I don't know, do something less. And then you freed up 4 to 8 more hours of your working day to make more money.
Well, I know some Malaysian corporates have allowed some of their staff to actually take on part-time work because they've agreed that there'll be less hours and then, of course, as a result, there'll also be less pay. I don't know whether this is going to just usher in the new normal when it comes to work. So, earlier on, two, 3 years ago when there was the rise of gig work, that was quite a surprise to Malaysians. It was not normal, right, that people could just suddenly find side jobs where, be it delivering Grab food or, you know, taking Grab cars. But I think there'll be more variations of that going forward.
Well, yeah. I mean, when I was in my first job, I was an internal auditor, right? Believe it or not, okay?
You were a bean counter?
I was a bean counter, right? Went to branches and found fault with their processes. But in my spare... I
believe the finding fault part.
I didn't have enough money, right, to get by. So I had to hustle, right? I found a job reviewing cars as a motoring journalist. And it was good fun. So on like weekends and spare, you know, whatever, right? I took cars out and tested them. And then I wrote like, you know, nice things. Well, not always nice things, but... creative things about new cars. It was quite fun.
Yeah, so the point is, you know, there might be a side hustle out there for you. Why not think about it? And you could monetize it, actually.
Okay, well, tell us your ideas. What would you do if you had the choice? At BFM Radio is the Twitter handle or WhatsApp 018-789-8899, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Gin Blossoms with Till I Hear It From You. Now, this bombshell shouting from the Defence Minister yesterday, Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri, that schools will close until...
It wasn't from Ismail Sabri, sorry.
Sorry, who's
it from?
It from
the Education Minister.
That's what I meant.
You forgot, Ismail Sabri is my best friend. You would have told me, remember? Yeah.
Let's just say the government. Okay, so the government said all schools will be closed from today until the end of the school term, which I think for various states is either December 18th or December 17th or December...
No, it's January 20th.
Sorry, yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, that's right. But of course, no, because the term ends on December 18th. So anyway, school holidays start, right?
Oh, yeah. So they would have been at home anyway, right?
Correct. So basically, you don't go back to school until next year, right?
It's a very long time.
It's a very long time. And when I saw that, my jaw dropped because already this year has been a wipeout, right, for schools and students. What have they learned this year? Nothing, you know. And it is also incumbent upon, according to the government, right, for schools to impose, to do this online learning thing, right? And I can confirm that at best, right, this online learning thing has been mediocre.
Yeah,
in terms of experiential learning, okay?
There are so many aspects to this, right? So there's the aspect from the kid. What impact will they be? Are they ready to go online? Then there's also the impact that it will have on families, right? Because for a lot of families, school, in a way, was a babysitter while parents went out to work.
Yeah.
So now that your kids are at home all the time, what happens to these parents who still have to work? Who is going to look after your kids? And the announcement, I think, came somewhat, wasn't unexpected, but probably is like, how do you manage now, right? How are you going to juggle everything? You could have managed for a month, you could have managed for 2 weeks, but the reality is that today is November the 9th, and you're going to have to manage till for another good 2 months till January.
Okay,
right? So, and then there's the impact it has also on the education level of Malaysians in general. Because so many kids, their school life will be disrupted, there's no exams, everything has been postponed. What does this mean then? Because education was supposed to be the great equalizer, right? To help people move up. It was the key to social mobility. Now that what, then what happens in this new normal?
I think nobody knows. I think even the government doesn't. In fact, maybe especially the government has no idea, right? But if you flip it on its head, and then you say you allow students to go back to school, right, until the end of the year, that's literally like a 5 weeks, right? How much can they glean from 5 weeks? Because the whole year has already been so disrupted.
Yeah.
So you have to say, right? You have to say, let's spend the next few weeks really re-examining the whole framework and decide whether children should just repeat the whole school year. Because okay, that's a big proposition, right?
All right.
If you allow your standard six kid, like mine, to go to Form 1, right? What will he know in Form 1 that he has? Well, how can he cope with Form 1 if he hasn't even done Standard 6 or
so
UPSR?
So hold back everybody for a year.
Hold back everybody for a year.
Okay, that's one possibility. But the other potential, I think, question mark is, are we really ready for online learning? You know, because we just announced it yesterday. But if I look at some of the statistics or data out there, and this is a recent UN study on 500 families on low-cost flats, albeit it's just on urban KL, but it's probably very telling for the whole of Malaysia. 3 out of 5 kids have no access to any form of online learning. Sometimes there's only one smartphone in each family, so they literally have to wait for their parents to come back and get online learning. And most families don't have a computer or broadband access.
Well, it's 3 levels of filtering, right? First of all, a good enough internet connection. Second of all, spare hardware, smartphone, iPad, whatever, right? The third thing is, do you even know how to get in? How many people know how to come into Zoom, log on, whatever, right?
Yeah.
There's like 3 or 4 filters, right?
And the parents have to be much more involved nowadays, right? Because they have to monitor the kids.
And then once you get beyond all those hurdles, right, how effective is it as a learning tool for students? I'd say not very.
Yeah, I mean, most parents...
Because I watch my kids when they're online, right? Those fellas are dossing around.
They're distracted,
man. They're
easily.
Distracted. They've got other tabs open. They've got some music playing. They're on mute. They're like sending... You know, there's like a direct messaging. There's a chat thing.
They're chatting to each other.
They're talking nonsense inside there. Oh, I checked out this Beyblade video. Have you seen this YouTube, whatever, right? They're not learning anything.
Yeah, those are real practical challenges of, unfortunately, this new normal in the post-COVID-19 world, right?
It's a big thing.
Yeah, it is a very big thing. I mean, we looked at the budget and we look at the education portion of the budget. It's actually the most in the federal budget. So a total spend of $50.4 billion. But I really wonder how much of it has been set aside to actually roll out programs which are going to work for children. Not just anybody, but all children from different levels, especially those kids who are in B40, so parents need to work desperately. What's going to happen to these kids? That's my big question. Who's going to spend time monitoring them?
Well,
because until we get a vaccine, until we have herd immunity, likely we will have waves of virus and kids will have to maybe go back to school, then they stop for a while and then they go back to school. You know, so how do we plan for all this?
Well, it's either the biggest omission in humankind or the biggest opportunity in humankind. Depends on how you look at it, right? If you're like a private sector entrepreneur and you look at this and you think about the technology and the mechanisms that are available today in terms of augmented reality, in terms of artificial intelligence, in terms of virtual reality and all these other kind of like Google glasses and whatever, right? This could be a huge opportunity because the marketplace is the world.
Yeah, but the... Right? But one thing I really worry about and I wonder is the mental health of children. Because children are social creatures. They're going to miss their friends. Asking them to stay at home and learn from a computer is never going to be the same as running out there in the padang with your kids or eating in canteens or just joking in class.
Well, speaking on behalf of chaos and mayhem, my 2 children. And then, of course, there's my wife, who's also known as Disruption.
Order? I thought she's Order.
No, she's known
and
as
you
Destruction.
Are Destruction.
They're fine. But it's again, it's the family unit, right, who brings it all together. Okay, 25 minutes past 6. We'll come back after this with Cold Chisel with Flame Trees, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Floton by Minnie's and Mickey's younger brother, Modest. Modest Mouse. Now, 6:39 in the morning, here we are on a Monday morning, and while we were all sleeping, there was news developments over the weekend in other parts of the world, and namely in America. Now, former Vice President Joe Biden has taken slim leads in Georgia and Pennsylvania, following, I think, counts in the ballot box, and we've seen results which have confirmed pushes him over the 270 electoral college votes needed to become the next president. Now, that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, officially the race hasn't been called and recounts in several states are pending. But Biden himself has launched this transition website and called on Americans to put on aside the divisiveness over the past 4 years. And in his victory speech, he promised swift action against the coronavirus pandemic and an orderly transfer of power. Meanwhile, Vice President-elect Kamala Harris also acknowledged her place as the first Black and Indian American woman to serve in this role. Now, what's interesting is Trump has been rather silent.
Yeah, that's ominous, because when Trump is silent, that means something's wrong or he's sick, right? But, I mean, he did tweet a few days ago, right, that he did tweet, and in capital letters, I might add, "I won this election by a lot." It looks like he went to Oxford and Cambridge for his English or so. Mm,
yeah, everything in large caps.
Yeah, shortly before the race is called. But we also saw on Saturday afternoon how former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani declaring without evidence that the Pennsylvania election was riddled with irregularities. So obviously, if Biden wins, the Trump camp is not going to go away with a whimper, right? They're going to be imposing lawsuits, making all sorts of disputes about the regularity of the poll. But I think by and large, the narrative is that this legal dispute and this opposition will fall on deaf ears. I think it looks pretty much that Biden is going to be the next man.
Yeah, the question is, will it be disruptive though? I mean, many of these lawsuits will probably end up being frivolous, but just take up time in court. And in the meantime, you know, the big question mark, what's happening to the U.S.? Who's running the country? Coronavirus cases in the U.S. yesterday, more than 100,000 for the last few days. It's really quite serious, the infection rate there. And at the same time, Trump making all these noises about refusing to kind of concede is not what America is used to. I think despite the fact that America is extremely divisive and it's very polarized, because let's face it, if we look at the number of people that voted for Trump and the number of people that voted for Biden, it's quite evenly split. I mean, 70 million people in US wanted Trump to be their president. That's the reality. That's the hard truth. Now, how are you going to move forward as a country? That's going to be, you know, a complicated question. Not easy for Biden, especially when we know so far in terms of the Senate, it's still going to be Republican leaning. Congress, yes, of course, is Democratic leaning. But is he going to be, unfortunately, what they call a lame duck president?
Yeah, and I take on board what you said in terms of Trump's support for Trump, because, I mean, despite the bluster, right, Donald Trump did actually reduce taxes. He did take on China, and not many people can take on China. He did bring some jobs back to America, and he did pull out some troops from the Middle East, and we did see some peace in that very fractured part of the world. What we do have now, and this is how the cards are stacking up, right? Joe Biden comes in as president-elect, but he also sees possibly a Senate, which is not going to be his party, right? So what does that mean? It means a kind of like a limbo rock kind of government, right? What does that mean for stimulus? What does that mean for the virus? What does that mean for the economy? We've got a transition period between now and I think next year.
January, early.
That's right. Yeah, weeks away. When the transition takes place, what happens in the meantime? We can see that as far as the markets are concerned, they're pricing in something which is akin to kind of like a lull period.
Well, actually, so far, I think if you look at the commentators on Bloomberg and even across on CNBC, the argument is actually in a way because Biden doesn't have full control over the legislature. It is likely that many of the Trump policies will not be rolled back immediately. So there won't be a sudden hike in corporate tax. That's number one. The other thing is that, you know, the U.S.-China trade war or the kind of I would say coal relationships are likely to continue. It's not like Biden is going to embrace China once again.
Yeah,
this theme is going to continue. So for the moment, it doesn't look there's going to be many, many changes in terms of how the market will react or whether there'll be any sudden changes also in terms of economic policy. Although I do think one thing we will see is sustainability, ESG investing, green technology, renewable energy. Those are very much Biden's kind of themes.
Yeah, $2 trillion worth of Biden themes, right? In the meantime, of course, the pandemic continues unabated. Worldwide cases surpassed 50 million. The US was the third straight day of more than 126,000 new cases. And more than 1.25 million people have already passed on from this pandemic, sadly enough. Okay, 44 minutes past six. We'll come back after this with more news. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that's Fleetwood Mac with Everywhere. Now, what is everywhere in the news this morning is the budget, right? Budget 2021. And I think by now we've had 2 days of analysis and narratives around the budget 21. I've chosen the story from Free Malaysia Today because it's a response by the Finance Minister, Tunku Zafrul, advising the EPF to allow more contributors to withdraw from account one. And this is something which has divided society because people say that you shouldn't allow people to already diminish a very small EPF savings honeypot. But then some other people say you should because that's the easiest kind of like low-hanging fruit to help you survive the next few months. And that's the way it is. But yeah, that's what the finance minister is saying.
I mean, when you think about the data, it's not very rosy, right? Because we know that for more than 50%, at least 70% of all people who have any EPF exhaust their savings within 5 years. And even if we look at how many people are covered under some form of a pension scheme in Malaysia, it's only 40%. Well, like you say, if you're really facing tough times and you've exhausted every option available out there for you in terms of getting money, then an EPF is the only source. Then my heart goes out to you and maybe this is something you should think about. But the next phase I think the government should consider is how are we going to help people rebuild their savings in EPF once, let's say, they get over this bump? And should we really relook at widening the social safety net, improving the social protection system, and considering maybe changing the legislature so that more people are covered and it's almost automatic? So, for example, some of these gig workers who are currently not covered, should they be covered automatically rather than it being a voluntary thing? Those are things I think we should consider in the medium and longer term.
Yeah, we've also seen how the budget has ballooned our debt ceiling to, I think, 60 to 61% of GDP. Now is as opportune a time for the finance ministry to increase that imposed limit in parliament, right? But that also means they've got to go to parliament and beyond getting the budget approved in early November, also to get that the debt ceiling imposed higher. I've got the Edge Weekly in front of me and on page 20 of the corporate pages. A little bit of a departure from the norm, not a non-budget discussion by Adeline Paul Raj, suggesting that banks may opt for a dividend reinvestment policy instead of all-cash dividends. And of course, traditionally, I think Public Bank, Hong Leong Bank, they do it, Maybank, has used, I think Maybank used to do
a DRP. Maybank used to do DRP.
And how the banks used to give it was a bit of a sweetener. I think you get a bit of a 5% or small discount to opt for the dividends.
Yes.
But that what also does is it also dilutes your EPS and I think hits your ROE. So it's kind of like you give on one side, but you take from the other. But it's something that the banks might not consider because their balance sheets are and their business is so impacted by the pandemic.
I've got the Malaysian Reserve and I'm turning to page 4 and it's about the hard work that lies ahead for all lawmakers because Budget 2021 goes into debate today. So like we know, it's supposed to be a unity budget, right? And both sides of the House, of the August House, are supposed to get together to come up with a solution to help the country overcome this COVID-19 era pandemic. But we already heard from some opposition members not being entirely happy, one of which is this glaring allocation of, I think, 81 million to JASA, which was kind of started during the Barisan National Government. It was put to rest and then it's now resurrected again. And there were question marks as to, you know, why do we need to allow this special agency to start again. And 81 million is quite a sizable amount of money when you consider that could that have been put to, let's say, healthcare use?
Oh, you just helicopter that to the whole country, right? 81 million divided by 32...
Sorry, it's 85.5 million.
85.5 divided by what, 32 million people? That's that's money still in the pockets. But it's also ironic, right? Because the budget at 322 billion ringgit is 17% higher than last year. Biggest ever. People say it's very expansionary. But I guess it just goes to show you can't satisfy everybody, right?
No.
There will always be brickbats.
I've got one quick story, though, and I think we covered that at 6:30, but I want to highlight it's on page fault also of the star. And I think it's parents and students appealing to ministry to actually lock down the SPM dates, because rescheduling it does impact private higher education institutions. So for a lot of Malaysian students, right, SPM is like the biggest thing when you're 17, 16 years old. It determines your future. Where are you going to go? What are you going to study? And if you keep changing the dates, what happens to these poor kids? Does their life kind of just stay in limbo?
Yeah, I guess it is. The whole education sector is in a bit of limbo now, right? And as you say, it does affect where you go and what kind of like courses you can do. Over the weekend also, we also saw, in fact, yesterday, WhatsApp was alight with videos about how this helicopter went down in Taman Melawati. Actually, there were four passengers on board the stricken chopper.
Two choppers, right?
There was two choppers, but one went down with four people inside, two deceased, and the two survivors were, in fact, the former MAS CEO, Dr. Ahmad Johari, AJ, among his friends, and an individual named Tan Chai Yen, a 51-year-old, a female, I believe it was.
Yeah, unfortunately, two people did not survive.
Okay, 6:55 in the morning. We'll come back after this with the 7 a.m. news bulletin. Then after that, the numbers, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.